Well, the first attempt was apparently abandoned because of a slight blip in the mechanics, but second time lucky. And North Korea, defying international warnings, it should be said, finally made good its threat to launch a long-range missile earlier this morning. Now, they fell in places that apparently they were supposed to fall, the three components of the missile. I can't really confirm the details with you, to be honest, and partly that's because with North Korea, you never really know quite exactly what's happening. The United States and South Korean military are currently searching for debris to analyse, and what they're trying to do is determine whether there might have been more to the satellite than they claim. Could, for example, this satellite be a rehearsal for a ballistic missile? That is the worry. The Security Council is now meeting to discuss a response that's being described as a provocative act by North Korea. And someone who can make a pretty good analysis based on years of researching the secretive state is Professor Andrew O'Neill. He joins us now. He's the director of the Griffith Asia Institute and a former intelligence analyst with the Department of Defense. Professor Andrew O'Neill, thank you very much for your time. Are you surprised that there was success today?
I think the test has taken a lot of people by surprise. Many people expected the test to be undertaken next week when you have elections, parliamentary and presidential elections in Japan and South Korea, but also the commemoration of the year anniversary of the death of Kim Jong-il. And the fact that it's taken place earlier, I think, has certainly taken people by surprise.
What does it mean?
Look, I think it means two things. The first dimension here is domestic, and as you mentioned in the opening, the test in April had been a fizzer. Kim Jong-un had invited the international media to observe the event. The North Koreans had opened up the test site for international inspection, if you like, in terms of the international media, and the test was a failure. This time around, Kim Jong-un clearly recognised that it had to succeed, and ironically, in a sense, the test site was not opened up to international media this time around, but it looks like it's been a success. So there's the domestic dimension in terms of Kim Jong-un shoring up his support among the military, and the second dimension here I think is a very important one. This isn't just for international or domestic consumption. I think this is clearly evidence that North Koreans are intent on acquiring an intercontinental ballistic missile capability that can, over time, achieve the objective of striking targets much further afield than South Korea, Japan, or even Guam in the Pacific, potentially striking targets on the west coast of the United States. So this has to be seen both from an international and domestic political dimension, but also in terms of, a very clear-cut, long-term program the North Koreans have for striking US targets.
I mentioned that the US and South Korea are interested to examine the missile to see whether or not this would lend itself to ballistics. You've just said that you think this is, well, essentially cover for developing ballistic missile technology. Does it matter what the United States and South Korea discover when they examine the debris, or do you think that conclusion's open irrespective of what they find?
Look, again, if media reports are correct, North Korea has, of course, claimed success in the past where failure has been the outcome. So we need to treat North Korean claims with an absolute grain of salt. But it's clear now that US military officials of the North American Air Defense Command, for example, are saying that this looks like it's been a successful test because the three stages have separated. You've had the final stage entering the Earth's orbit, which confirms that this has been a successful test. Look, in technological terms, I mean, it's difficult to say what can be gleaned from that analysis. But what is clear, I think, overall, is that the three stages of the rocket have separated, which frankly hasn't happened before with this scale of test, and that's why we should be, I think, reasonably concerned that this is a major step forward in North Korea's ballistic missile testing program.
Puts the pressure on China now, doesn't it? I mean, up until now, every time North Korea's tried to do this, pretty much it's failed. And so it hasn't been a real threat. It hasn't been something that has been really anything more than rhetorical or theoretical. Now that it's there, China, which is an ally of North Korea, really has a call to make on how much pressure it applies.
I think that's very true, and in 2010 and 2011, the former U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates warned the Chinese president in a bilateral meeting that the North Koreans were within 5 years of getting an intercontinental ballistic missile, and that this did really pose, a major threat not just to US-North Korea relations, but potentially the US-China relations as well, because clearly there is a viewpoint in Washington that North Korea will not undertake destabilizing behaviors if China opposes that. Now, I think that's a mistaken perception, because clearly the Chinese don't have a lot of control over what Pyongyang does. But this has the real potential, I think, to introduce some serious tensions into the relationship between Beijing and Washington. So it's not just a bilateral issue between the US and Pyongyang, or even Seoul and Pyongyang, or Tokyo and Pyongyang. This has much broader implications, I think, for the security dynamics in Northeast Asia.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks, Wally.
Professor Andrew O'Neill, Director of the Griffith Asia Institute, former intelligence analyst with the Department of Defense. I should add for the record that China has expressed its displeasure with this, and in the past it's cut off fuel lines along the border, so we'll wait and see whether or not that's what it's going to do this time.